Paynor Palace. If you've seen the photos, the canary yellow towers, the blood-red onion domes, the gargoyles that look like they're laughing, you might think it was painted yesterday. It wasn't. It's been that colour, on top of that mountain, since the 1840s. Welcome to the most ridiculous, most beloved, and most unapologetically theatrical palace in Portugal. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes of background before you get there. Not because Paynor needs a thesis to be enjoyed, but because the more you know about who built it and why, the more the place stops being a postcard and starts being someone's actual obsession set in stone. So, the man behind it, King Ferdinand II, German by birth, Portuguese by marriage. He showed up in Lisbon in 1836, 20 years old, married Queen Maria II, and within 2 years had bought himself a ruined hilltop monastery in Sintra for a remarkably bargain price. The monks had abandoned it after an earthquake and a lightning strike, which, fair enough. What Ferdinand did next is the part nobody tells you. Most kings, when they build a summer palace, they hire one architect, pick one style, Baroque, neoclassical, whatever the fashion is, and call it a day. Ferdinand did the opposite. He hired a German military engineer named Wilhelm von Eschweger, a man who, until that point, had spent his career building bridges and harbour fortifications in Brazil. Not a palace architect, a bridge engineer. And the two of them sat down and decided, let's put a bit of every style we like onto this hilltop. Neo-Gothic? Yes. Manueline, that uniquely Portuguese style with the ropes and the seashells carved into stone? Of course, Moorish horseshoe arches, because Portugal had been part of Al-Andalus for 5 centuries, and the visual memory was right there. Absolutely. Bavarian onion domes, because Ferdinand was homesick? Why not? The result, which most architectural historians at the time called vulgar, is now widely considered one of the first genuine works of European Romanticism. Ferdinand wasn't trying to make sense, he was trying to make a feeling. When you walk through the front gates and the palace appears above you on the hill, that wash of yellow and that splash of red, that's not paint. Well, it is now. It's been repainted recently. But the original palette, the one Ferdinand chose in 1842, was reconstructed from old photographs and watercolours in the 1990s. For most of the 20th century, the whole thing was a tasteful, faded, dignified, pinkish grey. Tourists in 1985 looked at it and thought, lovely, lovely. Then, in 1994, Portugal said enough, and put it back the way Ferdinand wanted it. Cue all of Instagram fainting in delight. Now, once you're inside, don't rush through. The interiors are weirder than the exterior suggests. There's an Arab room with painted trompe-l'œil murals where the artist gave up and just painted himself a fake skylight. There's a kitchen with the original copper cookware still hanging in racks. The last time it was used to feed a king was 1910, and the staff left in such a hurry the pans never came down. There's Queen Amelia's bedroom, which still smells faintly of lavender because the museum keeps the linens fresh. And there's the noble salon, where Ferdinand hung his personal collection of stuccos. Some of them are very ugly. Ferdinand had eclectic taste. The two stories that come up most often when guides walk visitors through. First, the Cruz Alta, the high cross at the very top of the park, 528 metres up. Ferdinand had a wooden cross put there as a private spot to think. It's a 30-minute walk from the palace door, and 3 out of 4 visitors skip it. The view is worth the climb. On a clear day, you can see the Atlantic. Second, the chalet of the Countess of Edler. Ferdinand fell in love, after Queen Maria's death, with an opera singer named Elise Hensler. She was a working-class American, and the Lisbon court hated it. He married her anyway, made her Countess of Edler, and built her a small Swiss-style chalet in the park as their private hideaway. After a fire in 1999, it was painstakingly restored. Walk over to it if you have the time. It is the most romantic corner of an already preposterously romantic place. That's most of what you need. One last thing. If you can, time your visit so you're inside the palace at around 11 in the morning. The Atlantic mist that wreathes the building from below and gives every photographer their best shot usually clears by then, and the light through the painted windows is, briefly, perfect. Enjoy the climb. The funny thing about Pena is that the more time you spend with it, the less ridiculous it seems. 20 minutes in, you start thinking, actually, why don't more palaces have onion domes? Then you turn a corner, and there's another one.